You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Ballot, the podcast. Conversation begins. I'm your host, Ryan Knightsey, and welcome back to part two of me struggling to figure out my 2025 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot. I believe in the first part I just said, like, you know, this is going to be me saying what my thoughts are on the candidates and putting stuff, but it ended up me being struggling. Real struggle city heat hours. And I don't necessarily expect the same for part two. I feel pretty set in my ways on who my picks are for the last three choices here, the last three regions, rather, here. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling less on the struggle bus this episode. I mean, physically, mentally, I'm on the struggle bus. For those who don't know, I have like a misaligned neck. And if you, those problems can get out of hand, apparently I threw it out again and, you know, the migraines start happening and everything, so it might be a little lackluster energy-wise this episode, but I'm powering through, doing my best. You know, I don't want to say that, like, I'm doing this for the podcast or that this isn't more important than my health, because it's not. It's more so just, look, I got one last episode, and the chiropractic appointment is not for a couple days, so I can't do anything anyways. It's just like, I'd rather have this out and done before the ballots are due on the 8th than wait any sort of longer and delay anything else, rather, especially as a two-parter. Look, I got a job to do, you know? I got a job to do here. So I want to finish up putting together my ballot. I guess if there was any other updates for that first half, you know, first part are we talking about modern U.S. and Canada, where I said I was going to vote for Punk, Cody Rhodes, the Briscoe Brothers, John Moxley, Becky Lynch, and Sabu. I also said I wasn't going to vote in Mexico, and I also said I was going to vote in Japan. I'm going to vote for Hayabusa, Zack Sabre Jr., Masaaki Mochizuki. No real updates. I gave the 90% positive or whatever percentage I said. I've definitely been thinking about it in the time since I've recorded the episode and however many days since I've recorded that episode. And, you know, Becky is still, like, throwing out there for me. But I'm still feeling fine with Becky. I kind of feel like, I don't know, I kind of feel like this might be, like, my first and last year voting for Becky if she doesn't necessarily turn things quite around in terms of presentation and all that stuff. You know, because I was thinking about it today, actually, about Becky, because a couple weeks ago I went to my wife's cousin's house in South Carolina, and her fiance and my wife's cousin both got into wrestling super hard, both in the WWE, rather. Both got into sports entertainment, rather, into WWE. And they both joined this whole train because of Peacock, because of the Peacock deal, right? And watching, and they both got into wrestling through Peacock, and now that, like, everything's getting split up again versus, you know, USA, CW, Netflix, ESPN Unlimited or whatever, plus whatever it is, they're watching less stuff because they don't have Netflix or ESPN, so they're just like, well, we're not watching all of the pay-per-views, PLEs, my apologies, their terms, not mine. And I was talking to them about, like, and just trying to get, like, a vibe check of, like, because I think a really good example of a classic of this new wave of modern WWE fan, both in terms of, I never watched, one of them was, I believe it was my wife's cousin that was like, I never watched wrestling growing up, I thought it was stupid, then we started watching it, and I thought it was very fun. And the other person was, I'm old enough to have watched the WCW. No, they didn't even watch WCW, I think. They watched the Monday Night Wars, but they were more watching WWF back then. But they knew of WCW, obviously. And then they stopped for whatever reason, and then they're back for this Peacock run. So you have, you know, those two elements playing into the thing. And it's just getting, like, the perspective of, like, you know, what the sort of, like, mindset of these fans are And the reason I'm bringing it all up with Becky Lynch is that, like, they weren't fans of Becky Lynch. And they acknowledge that, like, yeah, that I missed her past her man run, whatever it was. But now she's just kind of like a mean, you know, whatever person. And, you know, we didn't really like her. And I think part of it was, like, the kayfabe part of things is that she's a heel or whatever. But I do think part of it is just, like, yeah, if you just experienced Becky Lynch in this Peacock era, post, you know, way past the man, or, you know, a year or two, I think probably two or three, actually. Yeah, I can see the thing of, like, yeah, Becky, we're not big fans of Becky. They also said they weren't big fans of Sami Zayn, which frustrated me. But in the same vein, I also kind of get it. You know, I think it's, like, very similar of, like, if you just watched Sami Zayn from this period, you would have seen him during the Bloodline run, for sure, during his air part of the Bloodline. But, yeah, you don't know all that, all the great stuff of his indie days, the El Generico days, the, you know, even the NXT stuff, right? So I think that I've been thinking about that a lot. And I think Becky Lynch is, like, someone that, like, look, I think that I want to vote for her. I like her. I like her wrestling, like I said, more than I think other people. Yeah, I still think Mercedes Moné is by far the best wrestler of the Four Horsewomen. But I do enjoy Becky Lynch's work, you know, in my point of view. But at the same time, it's like, as time goes on, and the more I think about it, it's like, it's the run is so short. And as the farther we get away from it, I think it's going to be harsher on her case. And I do think that there's a chance where I'm just going to vote for her and then maybe stop voting for her. But at the same time, you know, I think Punk and Cody are going to get in this year. I mean, there's even people saying that, like, there's a chance that Sabu gets in this year, which would be crazy. And if that's the case, we're looking at 2 to 3 people I'm voting in, or I'm voting for, that would be getting in, and that opens up a lot. You know, I'm going to 100% put it on it. Probably Moné, probably maybe Samoa Joe. And then there's, I don't know why, but Goldberg is bouncing around in my brain. And I got to do some real thought process on that. But really, I mean, FTR, I think, is someone else there. But it's also a matter of who gets popped on, because I think we're coming up on getting a lot of these, like, AEW people up here. And I think a lot of them are a little too early, especially, like, I think Adam Page is, like, possibly next year, as sort of a preview for next year, I guess. I want to say Adam Page is right there in terms of potentially going onto the ballot. Let's see. Adam Page. He is 34. His birthday is going to be, he is going to be 35 next year. That is the old ballot age. When did he, what is it, 35 in 10 years, something like that? I always forget what this rule is. I don't know why. 35, let's see. 50 performers to reach the complete 10 years since their debut as a full-time performer. Oh, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure he has been a full-time performer for at least 10 years. We'll do a quick cage match search, because I'm pretty confident he has. I don't know. Does it say major company? Or that's just... No, it just says, I must have reached the 35th birthday and completed 10 years since their debut as a full-time performer, or be someone who has been a full-time pro wrestler for at least 15. He's wrestled since 2008. If you want to say, you know, major level, I guess we'll say Ring of Honor, and that'd be 2011. So, I mean, that's 10 years. So, look, yeah, Adam Page is probably going to go on next year for next year's ballot. So prepare for that. Prepare for those conversations. I got to start thinking about it. I mean, actually, I do have someone locked in. First pick for who that should be, in my opinion. You know, so there's, like, people like that is, like, I think Adam Page is an interesting conversation. But I also think he's someone that's, like, too soon, because especially, like, right now in October, it's like he's in the middle of his second world title run. Too soon. Anyways, we're not here to talk about modern US and Canada. I got no updates there. I obviously not changed my mind on Mexico or Japan, really. You know, I thought about more of other people. I there's stuff about Tiger Jeet Singh I enjoy, and stuff about, obviously, Io Sky, Io Shirai that I enjoy. But I'm not necessarily there. So we're going to talk about three other categories, three other regions. Talk about historical, US and Canada. Talk about non-wrestlers, and talk about the rest of the world. Similarly, I'm going to vote in two of those regions. So I'm going to have a 4-region ballot, 4-6-region ballot. And I guess let's start with non-wrestlers. Why not? Let's just start with non-wrestlers. So now, because I think it's the, I just want to rip this bandit off now. It's not really much of a band. No, well, it makes more. No, I, yeah. Let's start with non-wrestlers. Non-wrestlers, 22X, 7 votes. You have a crap ton of people in here. I believe it's the most of any ballot or any region, rather. I think historical is 20 and modern US and Canada is 17. I believe they are the, if I remember my sort of cipher primer, I believe non-wrestlers is the only ballot that actually grew year over year in terms of people in the region. If I recall correctly, I think by one or two people. You got a lot of people in here. I'll just go down the list real quickly. Bobby Bruns, Ted Turner, Morris Siegel, Mike Tenay, Roy Welsh, Larry Maystick, Koichi Yoshizawa, Stanley Weston, Jim Johnston, James Melby, Grand Wizard, Tony Schiavone, Kevin Sullivan, Dave Brown, Joe Higuchi, Rossi Ogawa, George Scott, Bob Caudill, Reggie Parks, Zane Bresloff, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura, and Bill Mercer. Bill Mercer obviously being the new person there, didn't get an episode in, so obviously give some thoughts about Bill Mercer, but also get some returners with Jesse Ventura, the baddie, that's not his voice, and Gorilla Monsoon, the baddie, Gorilla Monsoon. Anyways, so non-wrestlers, so we're just for the bandit off. I'm not going to vote in historical this year. Just because I don't feel that I put a lot more research in like rest of the world and Japan and modern, I guess, to a degree, non-wrestlers. You put in so much research with these other things, throughout the year and, you know, doing Ring Post Radio and everything, and only watching so much modern stuff. I want to do more of that research. I would like, the thing is like, I felt like this year, especially with how many rest of the world candidates, that were new to the ballot and part of the conversation that we've had on this program this, you know, all year long. I felt like, you know, if I am able to get a ballot, then I want to be able to vote in the one of the three categories that I definitely feel the least comfortable with: rest of the world, Mexico, and historical. And, you know, I leaned it obviously into rest of the world because of those four new names that were making up, you know, a good amount. I mean, Mexico only had one of 10X. That's what, 10%? The rest of the world had 4 of 14, so that's 31%. And baby historical had zilch. Actually, just kidding, it had Sweet Daddy Siki. But even that was super late into the game, and that is 1 of 20, so that's 5%. So I just was like, okay, you know, looking at those numbers, obviously, it's I want to go for the rest of the world and do some research there. All this to say, I'm not going to vote in historical this year. And I don't think this is controversial, but like my thoughts are, because of the non-wrestler region, which is every person has sort of like non-wrestlers almost like a subcategory, because every wrestler or rather every person in this category of non-wrestler is actually a part of a different category. For instance, Dave Brown is US Canada Modern, Gorilla Monsoon, US Canada Historical, Rossi Ogawa, Japan. They're all sort of part of these other groups. All is to say, and you know, there's probably some voters that probably know where I'm getting at here, is that I'm not voting in historical this year, and I sort of feel uncomfortable voting for any of the historical US Canada candidates, rather. I just feel uncomfortable voting for any of them because the thing is like you basically get these like extra votes for non-wrestlers to a degree. But they're thrown into the percentage pot or whatever, let's say, with whatever category they're in. You know, Rossi Ogawa will get thrown into the Japan category and get compared. You know, these are kind of to a degree bonus votes, right? It's a little confusing, but it's also just like, yeah, you get these extra things specifically for those people, but they are going to get counted against. And the thing is also, it's like, you know, any vote, in my opinion, where of like, you know, it's percentage based, right? So any vote that I give is going to affect anyone else. And if I'm not voting historical and I wanted to vote for James Melby, for instance, whatever, pull a name out of my butt, then I am like effectively not voting for everyone else in historical, and I'm just voting for James Melby, right? And that doesn't seem fair. I still haven't decided. No, this is where the struggle bus comes in. I still haven't decided if that's going to be a hard and fast rule, because there's someone on this list that I think is a slam dunk, but is it historical? That's probably the strongest candidate in the entire ballot. So I'm kind of like, do I hold that truth throughout this entire thing, or do I make an immediate exception? I don't know yet. I'll figure it out. But that all being said, I don't think it's right for me to vote for any historical candidate, U.S. Canada historical candidate. That's in the non-wrestler section. To that point, I am also willing to then, to make it fair, in my opinion, to limit my votes purposefully for myself to the X for everyone else. So if I cut out all the historical people, those people are Morris Siegel, Larry Maystick, James Melby, Grand Wizard, Kevin Sullivan, George Scott, Bob Caudle, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura, and Bill Mercer. If I cut all those people out, that's 7 people, 7X. Not 7X, but 7 plus 2, 9X. That's 13X left. And if I'm not mistaken, that would be 4 votes. People, if I'm wrong, please let me know. But I believe that would be 4 votes. So I will purposefully then limit myself to just 4 votes. And there are a couple people that immediately strike as like, okay, these are slam dunks. I think Bobby Bruns, leader of the clubhouse here, non-wrestler. And I'll throw in Ted Turner as well, are 2 leader of the clubhouses for me. Bobby Bruns, I think, is a Hall of Famer. I think, obviously, bringing almost like a theme will be of this non-wrestler section to a degree. There's actually a 3rd guy that I think is a slam dunk. I'll talk about him in a moment. Let's focus a little bit. But Bobby Bruns being a guy that, I mean, bringing basically, you know, helping bring Riggy Dozan over to Japan, I think is like obviously extremely significant, really helps, not jumpstart, I guess, but, you know, does everything it needs to be done for the Japanese wrestling by having Riggy Dozan go over there, being a great booker. And I want to say it was Oklahoma is where he was a booker in the territory days. But he obviously played a significant role in developing wrestling in Japan, which is obviously great. You know, he was a trainer for Riggy Dozan, the original trainer for Riggy Dozan. That's the bigger thing, I would say. I don't know. But I think it's, I don't know. I think like historical significance is so great. And then you have this like additional like booker drawing stuff, if I'm not mistaken. I fear that I'm going to get this stuff wrong, but I'm so tired that I can't remember everything. So I apologize. But I believe it was like Oklahoma or something where he had a good, decent drawing power as well in terms of a booker. So I think there's like enough there for me to be like, yeah, that's good. Historical significance is the bigger one, obviously, with the whole Riggy Dozan of it all. I don't have much more to say than that. Then it's just like, yeah, Bobby Bruns. Yeah, let's vote him in. The other person I said is Ted Turner. The thing about like Ted Turner, in my estimation, is that he is like, I think he is like partly all like the positives of the WCW management that all the other people that are not even considered for the Hall of Fame, but like part of all these sort of things that like you well known for management people in terms of creating Monday Nitro or these guaranteed contracts, you know, I guess approving them. I don't necessarily know if Ted Turner had a part in that, but I imagine he did as being the executive behind WCW, you know, keeping it on air for such a long period of time, deciding to keep wrestling a competitive in a marketplace that would soon become a monopoly, obviously. Not by his own hand, more so than just like the internet boom, and I guess, and also the company being bad, being bad creatively and financially and everything. And I think like he has all like the positives that like, you know, the outsiders have this historical significance of creating guaranteed contracts, but like they have so many other negatives to them. I mean, Eric Bischoff has, you know, creation of Monday Nitro and in 83 weeks and all this other bullshit, right? But at the end of the day, he also has so many negatives. And then there's like other people, right? I think like Ted Turner is like a guy that's like, he has all those positives, and what he also has is like just the guy that made sure that it stayed around. Plus, I guess what I'm trying to say is he also has all of the Georgia Championship Wrestling stuff, like the earlier stuff in terms of making sure TV stayed on, you know, every Saturday, 6:05 for the South, for wrestling in general. Making sure that existed when Vince McMahon just was like, here, he was given a spot, obviously, not given, bought basically the spot. And Ted told him to, you know, hey, give me all this wrestling. And Vince was like, oh yeah, sure, buddy. Gave him like 4 or 5 weeks or whatever. And then gave up, excuse me, not cutting that out. Gave him a couple weeks and just was like, just started giving him like whatever crap footage basically. And Ted said, screw this, I'm doing my own thing. Like, this is a guy that, like, wanted wrestling and saw the value in wrestling. Something that, like, wasn't, I don't know. I mean, you could say that, like, it was seen when, like, WWE got their new TV deals. But, like, something that, like, definitely wasn't seen until, like, the creation of AEW. Of, like, we see the value in this so much so that we can create a secondary market. You know, and it's one of those things that, like, I think that Ted Turner always saw the value in WCW. He just didn't have the right captains and commanders piloting his ship. Perfect analogy. Actually, not a bad analogy. But I think, you know, that all that stuff is invaluable. You know, there's these conversations about executives, but, you know, I don't really care about that. I think he is an important enough person in terms of the behind the scenes of WCW that I do feel like that there is room for someone of that ilk. And of all the people that would be in that behind the scenes period, for me, I mean, Ted Turner is the best one. And so I just think it should be Ted Turner. I just think he should go in there with all the WCW stuff and the formation of Nitro and the Mighty Night Wars and all that stuff, but obviously also the Georgia Championship Wrestling and keeping that alive and recognizing the value of everything in professional wrestling. I respect it. Plus, you know, living in Atlanta, I feel like I will get, I don't know, attacked if I don't vote for Ted Turner. Granted, I'm not born here in Atlanta, but my roots are currently settled here. And look, he ended up creating Ted's Montana Grill. They had pretty good food, pretty decent food, I guess. And I've driven down the Ted Turner Way or whatever the fuck it's called in downtown Atlanta many a times, walked it many a times. Yeah, so I just feel like as Atlanta, as an ATLian, I will be massacred if I didn't vote for Ted Turner. So, you know, there's safety numbers there. Who else? So, okay, this is somebody that also I'm pretty hard and set in voting for. I have been like almost like struggling, waffling back and forth between whether or not I should vote for this person, because I really like was unclear how much weight I should give to them. And that person's name is Koichi Yoshizawa. My struggles, and it took me a while to pinpoint this, but it was conversations with John Muse, and I appreciated John Muse, and he could be listening, and he knows. I think I have a bad time. This is the second podcast where I think I said I need to DM someone back. But again, John, in my defense, I had a migraine when you were messaging me that info. So Koichi Yoshizawa, the thing about him, and I pinpoint what the struggle was about him for me, what the struggle was just like, I can't wrap my head around how my understanding of an entire territory of Japan, I mean territory, country, regions, territories, has been completely, like, exists, right, through one guy, based, you know, in terms of my knowledge of it, right? The fact that we have footage, the fact that we have images, the fact that we have cards, we have attendances, we have results, the fact that we have some of my favorite guys in there in Japan, you know, foreigners coming to Japan, the fact that we have a lot of Japanese wrestlers to come to the States, you know, the fact that like the country of Japan was shaped around this guy's writings, distributions, magazine articles, photographs, videotapes being sent out, is baffling. And the problem of my waffling is that I can't comprehend that being done by one guy, especially in a pre-internet age. And the more I read, the more I come to the conclusion that that was the case, that it was pretty much one guy, that if Koichi Yoshizawa didn't exist, we would probably have a decent amount of lost footage. We would have a decent amount of lost media in general. No, not in terms of that it existed and then it disappeared. I mean, to a certain degree, I guess. Yeah. We would probably have the region itself would shape differently. Right. And it's not like saying that he helped spark, you know, the Japanese territory. That was obviously Riki Dozan and, you know, to a certain degree, Bobby Bruns, right? As we already said earlier. But the fact that it was shaped through him in terms of also like a Western eyes and then bringing, you know, Western stars and wrestling philosophy or whatever, I don't know, to Japan. It's just insane for me to think about, which is partly why I've struggled with him for so long of like, should I vote for this guy? But just like listening and talking and reading, it's just like, yeah, I think it has just been simply shaped by this. Like, I don't know if I would feel as confident I do voting in Japan if it wasn't for Koichi Yoshizawa's work. And the reason I think that is because I don't think, and I said this in the VOW Discord, and I think future guest, Ethan Tyler said something to the effect of there wasn't really a person. The only other person he can think of being on a level of Dave Meltzer in the States or Koichi Yoshizawa, Dave, whatever his fake name was in Japan. I think it was Dave something of a C, maybe. Is somebody in Australian who also was named Dave or David, which is hilarious to me. But like, there's no one of Yoshizawa's ilk that I know about in Mexico or Europe or, you know, all these sort of things. And these are territories that we are slowly discovering more information, attendance, results. People are going through the newspapers. You know, going through the history, finding footage slowly but surely. But even then, like, it's places like Mexico. Sometimes it's just like, nope. You shrug your shoulders, you're like, that's it. And there wasn't a Koichi Yoshizawa there. And Japan had one. And what would we know, what would we have of the Mexico territory if they had their own version of Koichi Yoshizawa? Right? That's what I keep going back to, is I didn't expect to talk this much about the guy, but this is the most recent discovery of thinking and conclusions I've had. It's to me, it is this thing of I cannot fathom it, but my comparison point has always been like Mexico or Europe or whatever. Like the work that like someone like Phil Lyons, past and future guest Phil Lyons, is doing right now with Europe and Eastern Europe, you know, France, obviously. Like that, they obviously didn't have a guy in real time doing all that stuff. But like part of the stuff with what Phil's doing is that he has to go through the newspapers in real time. If France had their own version of Yoshizawa, he would have those newspapers and results and attendance. And I don't know about the footage or whatever, but he would have all that stuff and then send it to like Dave or someone else. You know, at least I'll say Dave in terms of like it eventually going to like Western U.S., you know, culture, right? Wrestling culture, right? Like, we would not be, there would be not necessarily no need for Phil Lyons, but, like, all that information would be, like, more readily available, and we would have a better understanding of it. And that's just kind of, like, just kind of where I'm sitting is with Yoshizawa is, I like, we are slowly figuring out all this information with, like, Mexico, and I don't feel comfortable listening, you know, voting in the Mexico region just because I don't have enough historical knowledge about the territory. I know I have a little bit, you know, the basic amount, I feel like, in terms of history, but it is just thing of like, you know, it's the fact that we have to go through and mine for all this additional detail because there was no one actively sending that out in real time. Like, it's, you know, to do a Mexican comparison, Mexican region comparison, you could think about it like a Lucha blog. And obviously with the advent of the internet, it's a little bit easier, but like someone like Cubs fan, where he's able to track all this attendance stuff in real time and track news coming out of Mexico and whatnot and converting into an American, you know, English speaking audience, let's say. Like, I have to imagine that's what it would feel like to a degree. But then you're also going to throw in that, you know, if Cubs fan was throwing in footage or helping because of what he was releasing in terms of footage and newspapers and photos and whatnot, helping Mexican stars come to America or American stars come to Mexico, like in shaping the actual promotions, right? That's where it's just like this. I can't think about it because it baffles the mind, but that is where I've sat with Koichi Yoshizawa for the past however long, is because it doesn't make sense. But if you take him out, it is a our lack of knowledge is overwhelming, probably. Our lack of footage is overwhelming. And the territory of Japan itself, and to a degree America, looks different. How can you not say this guy is extremely historically significant? He feels like a great slam dunk in that degree. Drawing, I mean, I can't name off the top of my head people he brought over from states to Japan. Japan, you know, helped to bring over, whatever. Drawing, and I don't know what you could say there. I guess you could say working ability, what he's able to do effectively. Being friends with Dave, and I feel like he did it effectively. It's one of those things where it's hard to say, but I do feel like if you pull him out, everything's changed in terms of how I understand Japan. Without necessarily feeling like I need to dig through Japanese like archives and newspapers. Because it'd be the same thing in Mexico, where like a lot of people in the States just don't know Japanese, and they're just like largely not going to bother because they can't speak the language. And we would have to translate, find stuff, and then translate it. So yeah, I'm pretty strong on Koichi Yoshizawa. I didn't realize how strong I was on it. I feel like Bobby Brown's and Ted Turner are slam dunks for me. I also feel like at this point, Yoshizawa is also slam dunk. So the guy said earlier where I said I might forgive my rule. Speaking of slam dunks, about not voting for historical, is Morris Siegel. I think Morris Siegel is a slam dunk as well. A guy that essentially helped create the territory system, at least in the Texas territory, for damn sure. A guy that feels like he's a slam dunk. That it's crazy that he's not in the Hall of Fame. But the only reason I'm considering not voting him for him is because he's in the historical section region. And I feel like he is a strong enough person where I should just vote for him. But my struggle bus there is just that. The other people I've been thinking about, I believe, are Mike Tenay. I really enjoy Mike Tenay. There's a lot of commentators on here. I really enjoy Mike Tenay. I think, you know, a guy that he has gone on record and said that he doesn't necessarily think he would have gotten the WCW job if it wasn't for guys like Koichi Yoshizawa. Obviously, he had great work in calling the When Worlds Collide show, but he also thinks of his knowledge of Japanese wrestling that helped get him the job. I think he's a guy, you know, David Kidney. I've got Dave's on the mind. Garrett Kidney wrote a great article for Voice of Wrestling, you know, detailing the influence, I guess you could say, that Mike Tenay has had on professional wrestling. You know, you throw in another guy who I really also want to vote for, but he's an historical, and I'm less like willing to bend the rules on like Morris Siegel. But I got like Jesse Ventura, who's like the prototype for I take that back. Jesse Ventura is not really the prototype for a heel commentator, because no one has done it as effectively as Jesse Ventura, and he's undoubtedly the best heel commentator ever, and no one to me is really close. He's not the prototype because everyone else are just imitations and not necessarily close enough to be considered for me in terms of being the best or similar to Jesse Ventura. Whereas, like, I would say Mike Tenay is someone that is more of a prototype of the modern wrestling announcer, especially the not in the color commentary, but the lead announcer role. Somebody that's coming up the facts, the figures, the move calling. You know, someone that's obviously, I would imagine, inspired Excalibur to an insane degree. You know, I have spoken a lot on Ring Post Radio about my viewpoints on commentary and how I think commentary is weirdly underrated in terms of great color, great commentary, and great and on national television. It is marketing. It is sales. It is storytelling. It is all these things wrapped in one. Is information. Exposition, right? The storytelling, the exposition of it all, is incredibly valuable and important. And I love a lot of, I love some commentators. I hate, I dislike a good amount as well. But the ones I like, I think, tend to fall under the Mike Tenay grouping more so than anything else. You know, there was the, it was in my Vader time, the autobiography, or just biography, I think it's an autobiography. Yeah, it was written by Leon White, or at least, you know, transposed by him. Not transposed by him, but told by him. I don't remember where it was in the book. And I'll do this, but you know, for an example of how good a commentator could be, there's somewhere in the book where Vader, Leon White, says that, you know, he was in WCW at the time. JR, Jim Ross, was the, explain who JR is to a wrestling podcast listener. JR was the commentator for him for WCW, right? And he, and then obviously JR left. He went to WWF at the time, WWE, and Vader said that he wasn't really doing anything different in his matches, but when he would watch it back, there was something missing, and there was from his matches that he couldn't pinpoint it until he realized the difference is that JR was no longer calling his matches. That what JR brought to the table, brought to the booth, plus his matches enough where it made him seem more violent, more scarier, whatever, you know, whatever he was going for at the time, right? And I think commentary is a multiplier, a bonus that can add to your presentation. It tells the audience what you think of your product, what you want them to think of your product, but also can add bonuses. I think someone that does that really well, in my opinion, is Ian Riccaboni. He's probably my favorite commentator right now. I think Mike Tenay, for me, to bring it back to him, is a guy that plussed the action, especially the action of TNA, of how negative it was at times, a lot of times. I think he plussed enough. I'm going to throw in Don West in there as well. There's obviously a vote for Donnie West. There's the idea of like commentary booths as pairs, as tag teams, is an interesting idea. But I really enjoy Mike Tenay. I think his work and influence is pretty strong. I really enjoy him. I'm not one of those people that necessarily like him, but I really enjoy him. And you know, to another degree, you have Bill Mercer. I'm not voting for Bill Mercer. One, he's in the historical section, but two, I just wouldn't vote for him. You know, just because I'm only talking about him now because he's new to the ballot. So he's a guy in terms of commentary that, and this is another thing that I think commentary brings, that is thought less of now for obvious reasons, but something that commentary brought back in the day was that what's great about Bill Mercer is not necessarily his commentary per se, even though it was like, you know, solid, you know, he was calling the action and that's pretty much that. But what Bill Mercer brought, and what a lot of commentators brought at the time, basically was legitimacy, was, you know, if you're saying this is a fake story, fake stuff or whatnot, having a legitimate newscaster like Bill Mercer, the guy who informed JFK's killer to assassinator, rather, that he's going to jail. you know, this legitimate newscaster in the Texas area, you know, a commentator brings legitimacy to the product. It can enhance the kayfabe of it all, of the territory days, if you think about it, right? I mean, this is a guy that, like, you can see on nightly news telling the real stories, and now here he is calling a broadcast like it's real, like it's like Bill Mercer would do. He brought legitimacy to the product, something real to the product. And I think that's something that is kind of lost nowadays, frustratingly. I do think some people touch on it, some people don't. I think some people are trying to make it feel real, but they're not good enough actors to play the hushed tones or whatever, and they have that trope going on. Shout out Michael Cole. But what Bill Mercer was really great at is that he brought legitimacy to the broadcast booth. And I think that is a great, valuable thing. And Mike Tenay is not necessarily a guy that I feel like brings legitimacy to a booth, per se. I think he brings, obviously, expertise to the booth. And I think excitement. You can't deny Mike Tenay on being overly excited about what he's calling in the ring. But I think, like, you know, if you look at, like, AEW, for example, I don't think he necessarily did it per se in his time period. But bringing in JR to the beginning of AEW brought legitimacy to the company. And it's not necessarily legitimacy in terms of the kayfabe of it all, but legitimacy in terms of this is real. We're taking this seriously. There's money behind this. This is a real product. And that told a lot of people what it is. I think Tony Schiavone probably brought that to a certain degree as well, but really JR did. I really like Mike Tenay. I really would like to vote for him. There are other people on here that I want to talk about a little bit and figure out who my fourth vote is. But Bill Mercer, he's a guy that I think he brought legitimacy. He's a really solid, you know, play caller, basically. Good enough, good hand. The thing about him that I found, but I don't feel confident in confirming all that stuff, is that his behind-the-scenes role in World Class in enhancing the television presentation. I'm not quite, I can only really feel a couple places where they talk about it. So I didn't do enough research because I didn't get a guest to really confirm all this. But, like, there seems to be something there where he is a guy that helped introduce, along with, I forget the other guy's name, World Class, who really worked on the television presentation. But he's a guy that obviously Bill Mercer has the TV background, so it makes sense that he was like, let's make this a legit thing. So, you know, bringing in the sort of vignettes and audio emphasis, you know, the in-ring action, the multiple cameras, the close-up shots, and all these sort of things, you know, enhancing the presentation that is obviously stayed true to today. You know, back in the territory days, for the large part, it's just like you have the announcer, he's on the microphone, he's near the ring or whatever. And then you have probably one camera, maybe another camera in closer to the ring, but largely the wide shot capturing the footage, right? And Bill Mercer seems to have a hand in sort of elevating that and making the presentation that more closer to what we know now all the time. Did other territories have that? I don't know. I'm not enough in the expertise to know that. Was he a cohort in that that transformation? I think probably. I'm not entirely positive, but I would love for more research to be put on that. I didn't do enough to go to here, obviously, as you can tell. But if that ends up being true, that he did part of it, and you know, he was sort of a forefather in that evolution of wrestling presentation on television, that seems very significant. I would say. That would seem a stronger case for Bill Mercer. So just something to think about if you're a voter out there or a researcher out there. Just something to think about. Another person I'm thinking about is Jim Johnston. He obviously longtime composer in the same vein of like Jesse Ventura, where he is not to a degree a prototype, but more so in the fact that there are a lot of imitators of Jim Johnston, because Jim Johnston was obviously the best at his craft in terms of creating wrestling themes, an obvious draw in terms of creating all these wrestling themes, then WWE putting them into albums and then selling them and actually selling them for, you know, not record deals, but, you know, gold records, platinum records, whatever, you know, these massive, massive sales, you know, being on the Hot 100 for these records and these albums that he put together of all his music, practically, or at least produced by him. He's obviously the best at his craft. And I think obviously he's historically significant because he changed the way entrances are done. And obviously in a company like WWE, where entrances are the most important thing they have going on, Jim Johnston is invaluable. And the reason I can say that he's also the best at the craft is that not many people after him were ever really close. I would say the closest is probably, oh, I don't remember his name. I was going to say Razzmatazz. That's not correct. Not even close. The guy from AEW music producer. There you go. Mikey Ruckus. My brain is not working. Mikey Ruckus, I would probably say, is the closest. I think his quality is really good, and I think similarly to Jim Johnston, Mikey Ruckus does a really good job of variety, of creating a big breadth of musical themes, whereas I think like the CFO Dollar Signs don't really do a good job of that. Whoever the current group is, I think are pretty bad, worse, actually. I wouldn't be shocked if at some point they make AI music. I just thought about that. I hate AI. I already did a whole tangent on Ring Post Radio about that. Anyways, I think Jim Johnson's really strong. I think he has something in every single category. I think drawing is craft historically significant in terms of changing how it works. I'm probably going to vote for him over Tanay. I really like Tanay. I think he's someone in the bubble for me. I also, who else do I enjoy off my list? Zane Bresloff is a guy who I also like a lot. Like this guy, this sort of like weird shadowy figure in the background of promoting that I just find fascinating. But like the only, one of the few places where I find all of this significant conversation about what he did and what he attributed to both WWF and WCW boom periods, you know, WrestleMania creations and WCW whatnot, is really comes from Dave, and I just would like more sources on that. I really like Zane Bresloff as a candidate. I think like on paper it's like, yeah, I think I should vote for him, but I just want more resources, I guess, on him. That's something where I gotta do the more research. I should maybe do the more research, but it's more so that like the people in charge of like WCW and WWE aren't necessarily gonna credit the guy. I think that's the bigger problem. Another guy, obviously, I'm thinking about is also Roy Welsh, you know, predecessor to the Jarretts in Tennessee. I believe he got Jerry Jarrett into the wrestling business, getting him a behind the scenes role. Which eventually led to, you know, Jerry taking over the territory. He booked the territory in like the 40s, 50s, 60s. It certainly wasn't like the biggest territory per se, but I think it's very significant in terms of what he was able to do. He was still a very good booker. Bringing Jerry Jarrett into the company, into wrestling, is really significant. So I really like his case a lot. Other than that, is there anyone else I really want to talk about? Reggie Parks, the belt thing, a guy who's really great at his craft. Less, not really think about it. I just brought him up because I saw his name. I don't really think about him in any way. Rossy Ogawa, I don't know, man. No, probably not. Break Scotty's heart, maybe, but I don't even know if Scotty feels confident about Rossi Ogawa. The Marigold stuff, you know, and Ross, Scotty puts it this way, is that Rossi Ogawa is not really his, I don't know if, I'm not going to quote Scotty here, because I don't necessarily know if you'll agree, but my viewpoint of Rossi Ogawa is that he is not really a great booker. He is not really good at promoting. He can't grow an audience that well. You know, I did that, all that Stardom attendance data I put together, and it's very obvious that, like, this company did not grow over the course of its run, basically, with Rossi Ogawa. It did not grow until Bushiroad bought it, practically, right before the pandemic, or during the pandemic, or whatever it was. It was, like, growing 2019. It took, like, practically a decade for the company to finally start growing, and it mainly is because of, you know, other things failing, I guess. Not really failing, but falling down, and obviously he had stiff competition in those 2000s, but, you know, it's... Didn't really work out. Didn't really work out fully. But really, when you're looking at Rossi Ogawa and the positives of his case, it's somebody that he is a guy that has an eye for talent, has an eye for developing talent and putting the right atmosphere together to develop talent. There's a plethora of Joshi stars that have come out of Stardom. There's a plethora of people that, the super rookies that are coming into Marigold that have so much promise. The Yamaokas, Victoria Yuzukis, obviously, you know, going back to Stardom, Io Shirai, Mayu Iwatani, you know, there's a lot of people that have all these promises, right, in terms of the business, that are great wrestlers. It's just that he wasn't necessarily a great wrestler, I don't necessarily want to say booker, but promoter, right? And I think that's the biggest negative. He's a guy that has an eye for talent, has a way for a really good way of developing talent, but he is just not good at the other, arguably more important part. So yeah, anyone else that I'm really feel like I want to talk about? Anyone I cut out that I'm definitely not voting for? Gwyn Wizard's interesting. Tony Schiavone is whatever, I guess. I don't know. Jesse Ventura I like a lot. So I think what I'm going to do for non-wrestlers to wrap all this up, I'm only going an hour. Holy shit. I'm going to vote for Bobby Runs. I'm going to vote for Ted Turner. I'm going to vote for Koichi Yoshizawa. And I'm going to vote for Jim Johnston. I think those will be my four votes. Obviously, not doing the full seven. I'm going to do those four votes to make it fair. I hope it's four. If it has to be three, sorry, Jim. But I'm going to vote for those four, cut all the historicals, cut all the extra votes for that, and make it four votes. Bobby Runs, Ted Turner, Morris Siegel. Sorry, not Morgan Siegel. Darn it. There are going to be people who see my ballot and don't know this audio and don't see Morris Siegel and get angry with me. And, you know, if you listen, you'll know my explanation. But Bobby Runs, Ted Turner, Koichi Yoshizawa, and Jim Johnston, those are the people that I will vote for in non-wrestler. Let's quickly go to historical. As I said already, I'm not going to vote in for historical. There are a lot of people in here that I do enjoy. Junkyard Dog, obviously, is a big star Mid-South for about 5 years or so. An undeniable star. He's a better worker, obviously, during his heyday of that, you know, those early 80s in Mid-South. You know, that prime era. Obviously bad later in his career. But, like, you know, what if you really want to speak to just real quickly on how big of a star he was and how well seen he was, is that when he gets scooped up by Vince, he is practically number two behind Hulk Hogan. And look, no one's beaten Hulk Hogan. But the fact that Junkyard Dog was practically number two behind Hulk Hogan is pretty crazy. Obviously, that all falls apart, and I think part of that is just because Junkyard Dog gets the checks and the drug stuff really starts hitting, as it were, as the kids say. And so it just kind of, everything falls apart, right? And he, you know, cashes out to a degree, to put it nicely. But it's just like, you know, it's this conversation of longevity that I want to start having next year, you know, slowly and thinking about longevity, because I'm looking at it with like the tag teams. But it is this thing that I've noticed already in some preliminary longevity research for tag teams, is that, you know, longevity is very important. And I think most, I think the average median Hall of Fame longevity in terms of how long people's, not runs, but how long, well, not their peak prime years or whatever, but just like runs themselves, is roughly like 16 years. Like the average Hall of Fame tag team is like 16 years. There's some that are super long, like the Rock and Roll Express. And there's some that are super short, like Crush Gals, or Holy Demon Army to a degree. I think they're like 7 years, I want to say. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Or Rocca and Perez, I believe they were really short. But both like Crush Gals and Rocca and Perez, they were on there because even though they're extremely short, they're extremely massive draws. I think that applies to like a lot of other people, right? You know, you look at the ballot, right? Look at the ballot itself. Longevity should be a prime consideration rather than a hot 2 or 3 year run, unless someone is so significant as a trendsetter or historical figure in the business or available to the industry that they need to be included. People look at the longevity, but if it's someone that is, it's short, but it's so insanely powerful, as that blurb I just read was, if they're so extremely powerful and have so much, you know, they're so dense, you know, in terms of their, what they have to offer in terms of the Hall of Fame, then they get included. They tend to get included. I think Junkyard Dog is a guy that fits that bill. You know, he does have like a lot of negatives, and not necessarily negatives, but just like a lot of downsides. I don't think he has necessarily other things that take away from his case other than don't do drugs, kids. But I just think he's like incredibly dense in terms of his popularity and stardom in those early 80s for Mid-South. So, yeah, someone I would like to vote for, but I'm not going to vote for historical. I think June Byers, legit star, successor to Mildred Burke, is pretty good. I was not a fan. I was so not a fan of that movie. What the frick is that Mildred Burke movie called? Oh, I wrote it down. Hold on. I have it in my, God, if you think y'all are wrestling nerds and have your, notebooks of star ratings and whatnot, mine is so nerdy. I got stats pull of all this thing, but also I have the same thing for my movies. I can tell you how many movies I've seen, 1,005. I can tell you all the times from all those movies I've seen, 69 days, 14 hours and 40 minutes. Incredibly nerdy. Anyways, what was that freaking movie called? Queen of the Ring. I thought it was awful. I practically stormed out of that movie theater when that movie ended. I thought it was so bad. It upset me greatly. Anyway, June Byers. She's somebody that like other people in terms of like rest of the world or other people, other cases that like stuff gets cut short for outside circumstances. For June Byers, her stuff, her career sort of gets cut short because NWA changes their minds on women's wrestling. One could make an argument that if June Byers was a bigger star, they wouldn't have changed their mind. I don't think it applies here at all. I think it's just classic boys being boys and kicking out the women. No girls allowed. Because she was a star. She was a massive star. Maybe not as massive a star as Mildred Burke, but still a massive star in her own right. So yeah, I like June Byers a lot. The Von Erichs. Oh, speaking of longevity and lack thereof, I mean, it's incredibly short. I think like they are really solid wrestlers. The trio stuff. I throw out the trio stuff to a degree, sort of like the Vianos, where it's just, I don't think the Vianos, all five Vianos ever teamed all five of them together at once. But even then, like, the Von Erichs is so incredibly short. I think you can, like, throw in some single stuff here and there, especially when they're, like, really teaming a lot as a trio. So, like, I think you can throw in a lot more single stuff of, like, you know, when they're, like, feuding with the Freebirds and they may be doing, like, singles matches throughout that. You know, it's, like stuff like that. It's, like, I think when you, like, search on Cage Match and you search up trios matches of the Von Erichs, with Kerry, Kevin, and David, and you don't see a lot, you're like, okay, they weren't that great of a team. But it's like, there are single stuff that like part of these feuds. Like when I'm watching Raw or SmackDown, and I don't know, pick a tag team, Xavier Woods of the New Day is having a singles match against, I don't know, Ivar from the Viking Experience, I think, Raiders. Because the New Day and the Viking Raiders are feuding, I'm going to consider that singles match. Of course I'm going to do that. I think it'd be ridiculous not to, quite frankly. So that those are the kind of single things where, like, if the singles matches are part of the feuds or part of these sort of storytellings, then it should definitely be included. And I think, like, especially like 83 with the feud of the Freebirds, that should all be included. I think there's like elements that people brought up about, like, once David passes away and you have Kerry win the gold off of Flair, the NWA world title off of Flair, like, should that be included? And I think I'm going to include that for my tasting, since it's like in memory of and part of the whole thing. And to a degree, sounds morbid, but to a degree, David was a draw for that show, and you know, all these sort of things. But I there's stuff that, like, I think get included in here that to bolster up the case. It is less time, I think, than even Junkyard Dog. I think it's only like 3 or 4 years. It's not that strong, and that stinks. I still think I might vote for them. I think, like, historically significant. I think they're a team that, like, you can't discuss territory wrestling without them. They're one of the biggest stars of the territory days, even if it's, you know, like a burning star, right? That it's not going to last long. Is that what stars do? The thing where it's like they burn out quick, basically, right? It did not last long. But they were massive stars of their time period, massive stars of the territories, you know, international stars, right? In Japan, Israel, I assume Palestine. Not going to get into it. But yeah, I think, like, incredibly, you know, if I'm talking about, like, longevity in terms of they have to be incredibly dense and powerful, you can argue the Von Erichs are dense. But, like, it has to be dense, and I think that, like, there is so much significance to them existing in professional wrestling. It's just almost, like, existing as, like, draws and stuff, and this family story, and, you know, turning into a movie is, you have these things of, like, you know, have, like, Becky Lynch is studied, right, by text. I think someone's life getting turned into a movie is similar to me, maybe it's because I value movies significantly, because it's my career, why I came down to Atlanta. But I think that's very significant. Turning someone's life, dramatizing it for a movie is very significant. I don't know. I like the Von Erichs a lot. They only get 6 votes, so it'd be June, Junkyard Dog, Von Erichs. Wild Boar Curry, I like a lot. Cowboy Bob Ellis, he's like a slam dunk draw case. Wild Boar Curry also, obviously, said I liked a lot. You know, guy that popularized the use of steel chairs. How can you not vote for him? Dave talked about Black Gordman and Great Goliath, and that seemed very strong. Mad Dog and Butcher Vachon, legit top of the card tag team. That's probably Sputnik Monroe, somebody that helped break down racial barriers in the South, right? That was his big, you know, sort of claim to fame, as it were. Ole Anderson is very interesting for me. That's pretty much all my big thoughts on that region of historical. Let's finish up here for rest of the world. 13 acts, 4 votes. Jose Torres, Spear Sarion, Royal Brothers, Adrian Street, George Gordienko, Billy Joyce, Otto Vanz, Dominic DiNucci, Killer Carl Cox, Gilbert Leduc, Steve Gray, Ted Boy Marino, and Les Kellett. So of the four, I should say, there's some people in here that I think are, in my opinion, slam dunks in this are Jose Torres and Spear Sarion. I like both of them a lot. I also really like, and I'm going to vote for both of them. I'm also going to vote for Adrian Street. No. Adrian Street, I said it before. Again, I'll say it again. I think I fear that he's going to get the eye of Sauron of fly-in voters for Adrian Street. So we'll see how that goes for him. But I really like George Gordienko. He's like another guy I really like, a guy that, you know, similar to Jim Byers, similar to Ted Boy, a guy that, like, you know, not necessarily Gilbert Leduc, but, like, in terms of, like, tag team kind of, but just like a guy that, like, his career would have been different if it wasn't for outstanding circumstances, aka communism, the Red Scare. You know, a guy that traveled the world, partly because he loved art, but also because he liked to wrestle. A guy that would have been NWA world champion. had things worked out differently. I think, you know, not a lot of footage, but he seems like really solid, you know, a shooter, a legit shooter that everyone loved. And back in the day that mattered significantly. So that's that to me, that sings high praises of how, of his working ability. Massive draw. And, you know, there's that book. I forget the name of the book. I don't remember what it is. I'm gonna look it up. What's the George Gordienko book? Beep boop boop beep beep boop boop boop. I gotta give the plug out there. Like I wrote it. Beep boop boop. I believe it's George Gordienko, Canadian wrestler, artist, and Renaissance man. By Steve Verrier. It's like a little French, like Verrier. Is that something? Yeah, so like I think he's like a massive, a pretty significant draw as far as we can tell. A massive shooter, which is very good, and yeah, throwing up for the Painters, baby. Shouts out to my wife. So I really like George Gordienko. I really like Jose Taras. I really like Spear Sarion. Great workers, great draws. I mean, not necessarily great workers, but great draws. I think the rest of the world has a lot more of those like slam dunk draws. I think I said it before. I don't have a lot of time left, so just know that I'm voting for Jose Taras and Spiros Arion. That I watched that footage of Spiros Arion and the riot footage versus whatever that other guy's name was, where he bloodied up. That ruled. That's like a Hall of Fame match, my opinion, baby. That ruled. That kind of heat. That's what I like to see. Spiros Arion. Oh, who was it? Fez? I want to say he wrestled Fez a bunch. Might be confusing with Jose Taras. I don't. My brain is frying out. And I apologize for the lack of in-depth conversation. I want to say it was Luthez. I don't remember. I can look it up. I've my brain hurts. I need to stop talking about my brain. I'm so sorry, folks. Maybe I shouldn't have recorded this. I don't know. Oh boy, the struggle of this episode isn't me on my ballot. It's me and my health. All right. Anyways, I want to put more emphasis and talk towards the four that were in here. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if I said it earlier, but they had the only region that had the most amount of new people on the ballots, obviously, from this year. Jay Bailey Duke, Steve Gray, Ted Boyd Marino, Liz Kellett. Had a lot of conversation about them. I really like Ted Boyd Marino a lot. That was the first episode of season two. With Verb Abrams. I think it was a really great episode. I am sort of upset that it was the first one, even though that was an episode that helped me get a lot more guests. So I appreciate Verb for coming on and saying yes initially, because that was a significant guest for me, and a significant episode to help me get other guests, because they would check that out and see, oh, okay, this guy apparently knows what he's talking about to a degree. So I do want to shout out Verb Abrams because of that. But I also think Ted Boyd Marino is a guy that, like, again, a guy that suffered from the changing political regime of his country, of Brazil, during his time on top. A guy that was such a massive star that he was the biggest star in wrestling. He was such a big star of wrestling that became a TV star, a guy that was, like, second to Pelé in terms of stars of Brazil, which is pretty crazy. You know, pretty freaking crazy, if I do say so myself. I think he's the strongest of the new people. I really like Ted Boy a lot. I think there's a lot of shadows, and as we discover more information, I believe, like, the studio, I think part of that first episode is that we didn't really have, like, the data, and it's being discovered more and more, but we didn't have necessarily the data about, like, the studio audience. I believe I saw Verb Abrams post something to the effect, this is secondhand, so don't quote me on this, but I believe he said that the studio audience was similar in size to a Corican Hall. And if he was, I don't think he was selling it out every single time per se. It was a taped show, but you have to imagine some degree he had a good amount of fan base there. But that, you know, doing that twice a week, I believe, for however many years, he for 1 year, I don't remember what year, I think I wrote it down in my little run sheet, the Telecatch programming was the number one show in Brazil of all shows, and that's pretty good. And Ted Boy's the guy on top. Like, imagine if Cody Rhodes is on top of WWE and Monday Night Raw is the number one show across the entire year of 2025 television. How would I not be like, yeah, Cody's a massive draw, you know? That was Ted Boy, right? That was Ted Boy in Brazil. And that's pretty good. I like Ted Boy a lot. I'm going to vote for Ted Boy. I'm voting for Jose Torres, Spiros Arion, Ted Boy, Marino, and George Gordienko here. I'm skipping a lot through the rest of the world, so I apologize. If I had to rank the new people, which is not a new feature that I have not done in this entire episode or the last one, Ted Boy would be number one in terms of the rest of the world. Jay Bailey Duke is very close second, I think. I think, like, if Spiros Arion, who's 1550, goes in, which it looks like he might. I suspect he might. 60%, though. We'll see. But if these two guys go in, Torres and Spiros Arion, opens the door. Jay Bailey Duke is a guy that, like, I really like as a candidate as well. He's number two. I fight between Steve Gray and Les Kellett. I'm leaning more so towards Les Kellett as a three and then Steve Gray as four, maybe. Les Kellett just has more of that, like, drawing stuff that I feel like Steve Gray has, even though Steve Gray is a way better wrestler. Even though Les Kellett is actually obviously, like, really great at what he does. You know, he's another guy I speak about of, like, the best comedy wrestler of all time is most likely Les Kellett. And shouldn't there be a Hall of Fame that includes him? Includes the best comedy wrestler of all time? I'm not voting for Les Kellett, but he's a guy I think about. For the sake of brevity and not realizing that I went so long on non-wrestler, Jose Torres, Spiros Arion, George Gorenko, and Ted Boy Marino. I think that's the rest of my ballot. I will definitely confirm it by posting it online, but as of right now, like, once I send it in, I'll post online. But as of right now, what I'm sitting at, to close up the loop of this episode, Modern US and Canada, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, the Briscoe Brothers, John Moxley, Becky Lynch, and Sabu. Historical, no one. Abstention. Mexico, I abstain. Japan, Hayabusa, Zack Sabre Jr., Masaaki Mochizuki. Rest of the world, Jose Torres, Spiros Arion, George Gordienko, Ted Boy Marino. Non-wrestlers, Bobby Bruns, Ted Turner, Koichi Yoshizawa, and Jim Johnston. If you want to change my mind, go for it. DM me on that VOW Discord if you're listening there or DM me on Blue Sky if you're there. You can DM me on X, but I just probably won't look at it. You can try. Certainly try. If I'm that bored, I go back to X, but I want to get off that thing. It's the problem with, like, all these social medias is being, like, a wrestling podcast person is, like, you know, especially, like, a small time thing. It's like, you know, I really need to grow the audience, and social media is a way to grow that. But, like, X, because it's not, I have so much evidence to suggest that, like, X specifically does not actually grow your audience. And as the days go by with AI and all this bullshit, then it becomes even worse. Anyways, I digress. I'm feeling pretty good with that ballot. I like it a lot. I'm gonna say this is like a 95% confirmed. So if you are doing a public ballot tracker, don't take it. I'll post it when I send it in and whatnot. But I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about it. I will definitely. I'm working on some ideas for, like, next year's season. I think, like I said, there's some people on here that'll be interesting to talk about next year, like an Adam Page type. Be interesting to talk about. I don't think there will be an episode next week. I think this will be the last episode. This will be like the penultimate episode of the season. Next week there will be nothing. The ballots actually, there won't be anything for a little bit, probably. I feel like Dave had a quick turnaround last year because he was counting them as they came in. So I don't know how, I don't remember how quick it was. Cause it's not going to be done in a week. I don't think it could. I don't think though. And then the week after that is full gear. So I don't, I kind of, the week after that Survivor Series and Final Battle, if they even get in the week after the 14th issue, that would be pretty good. Cause there's not really anything that I could see on the calendar, of him really needing to get it in. He could give it up by the 21st, then also do a full gear preview. You know, we'll see how Dave and his little fingers work. anyways, it could be quick. It could be a while. Cause once he hit full gear, then you got Survivor Series and then you got Ring of Honor Final Battle. You're starting to get hit. And then after that, Cena's retirement. So got a lot of, I think there's a chance he gets it done in a week. He should, if he's smart, he's counting him as he does it. But anyways, so this will come out obviously the 29th, the way you're listening to it, 5th next week. There won't be an episode from the ballot. Our October of episodes is done. Our Spooktober episode of episodes is done. I doubt there'll be one on the, there definitely won't be a one on the 12th as well. And maybe I have an episode on the ballot results on the 19th. Otherwise, maybe the 26th. That would probably be what I imagine. Other than that, I guess that is it for me here on the ballot. I need to go use a heating pad. Because the thing about Misaligned Necks is not only you have all the other stuff, but then you start losing feeling in your shoulder. And it hurts really bad. And it's like a numbness and a burning painness. You lose feeling in your tricep. And it goes down your arm to like the bottom of your hand where your pinky is. And that edge of your palm. You get like pins and needles and stuff, and you just start losing feeling in your arm. And I'm losing feeling in my arm as I'm recording this. So, like I said, this stuff doesn't matter as much as my health, but I want to get it done. It's been an hour, 15 minutes, 20 minutes almost, and I want to be out of here. So I apologize for the brevity. I should have gone on longer. But yeah, I probably go longer if we do a Ring of Host Radio episode about our ballots that would already be turned in at that point. So go check out that, I guess. And I'm very excited to see the results. The end off season 2, getting the results of what the ballot is, seeing who's going to be on the ballot next year for the first time ever. I'm excited for that season of the ballot. Talk about new people. You know, you're talking about people all year long, and then it's like, okay, come on, Bentley, let's finish up here. Anyways, I'm losing my mind. I appreciate everyone for listening to this week's episode of The Ballot. We'll be back in a bit to hear the results of the 2025 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. I appreciate everyone for listening. I appreciate the show's growth this year. And we'll close out the season next episode. So until then, goodbye, everybody. Ring Post Radio is the only show hosted by Ryan Knightsey and Scotty Edwards that talks about the entire world of professional wrestling. With new episodes coming out every Sunday, there is absolutely no reason to not listen to real, honest wrestling opinions from two crazy maniacs. Have a hot boy summer and listen along to Ring Post Radio every Sunday on the Countout Network. This has been a Countout Podcast.